Michael? Have you come home, Michael? Are you angry because you fear that the current KPFT fund drive implies that 90.1 is in trouble? That the very wonderful So What's Your Story may not be aired? Don't be angry, Michael. Remember, KPFT is corporate-free, and therefore listeners are obliged to keep the programs afloat through their generous donations. So don't kill Michael. Call 713-526-5738. Welcome to So What's Your Story? I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, and I'd listen to Dr. Loomis, albeit a really bad imitation if I were you, because we are amid our fall drive. Nobody's laughing. Nobody liked that. Everybody's sitting here with a straight face. Tatiana, you didn't think that was an incredibly talented spotlight? Okay, good, good, good. I didn't say I was an actor. Listen, week in and week out, a team saturated in talent, Mary Edgerton, Warren Holloman, Greg Audell, Tatiana Gago, and I bring you great storytellers, common folks with uncommon stories to tell, who take on an astonishing journey each week before bringing us back to the present. Poignant personal narratives are customary fare on So What's Your Story, but esteemed tellers of the tall tale have also adorned us with folk tales and myths, fanciful and fantastic. But regardless of genre or teller, every story has one thing in common. They connect us as human beings. We plug into each other by plugging nothing into the wall. So yeah, I need you to call us right now at 713-526-5738 to keep this undeniable magic alive and let one of our steadfast volunteers take your information and your donation. I'll thank you on the air unless you tell me otherwise. Calling is best, but if you're not a phone person, go online to kpft.org, then to donations. Please select a form of payment and scroll to So What's Your Story. That's important, as the program that you designate for your support. That's important because when you do that, KPFT leadership sees that as an essential component, us, to the eclectic KPFT inventory. We're going to talk more about our fall campaign in just a few minutes and hear from Tatiana, but who's our wing person, our engineer, and the driver behind our social media. But right now, it's time to celebrate the definition of fall fun. When witches go riding and black hats are seen, the moon laughs and whispers, "'Tis near Halloween." And there's no better way to celebrate than to tell scary stories. Blood-curdling, menacing tales that will keep us up all night. And I've got just the folks to do it, or at least put the fun in fear. Alan Gardner Atkinson has been on before, and when you listen to him, you'll know why he's back. He's got this effortlessly fluid style, complete with his signature engaging tone, perfect for tales of intrigue. Librarian Candy Bame is here, and she's proud because I pronounced her last name correctly, right?
Yes.
That kind of shocks you, didn't it? Hey, it shocks you. I know. She can adapt to any audience. I heard her at the Storytellers Guild last month, and I was really impressed. She just has that magnificent conversational style that you're going to love, and ultimately she gets everybody involved, and these are two really great tellers. Welcome, both of you. It's so glad that you're here. Helen, you've been on what? 14, 18 times? You've been on a few times.
Well, not quite that many, but I've been on maybe about three or four.
And it's been great. Let's kick it off with you. You're an actor, a theater director, and a storyteller. You're also on the board of the Houston Storytellers Guild. Mm-hmm. Alan, you know, tell us some of the roles that you played on stage.
Well, some of the roles I've enjoyed most are, I think my all-time favorite is probably Willie Eisenring in The Firebugs, and I also greatly enjoyed playing the General in The Balcony, and Signalman Urban in The Caine Mutiny, and the singer in The Death and Life of Sneaky Fitch.
Beautiful. Key roles. You know, I'm always fascinated about an actor's take on acting versus storytelling. I don't know if you know the story, but David Rainey, I don't know if you know David Rainey. He's an actor at the Alley and a very prominent Houston actor. He was also on the faculty at UHD for a number of years, and he's been on the show. And the first time he was on the show about, I want to say a good 10 years ago, he was pacing back and forth, and he was a nervous wreck. I said, David, why are you a nervous wreck? You are a magnificent actor. He said, yeah, an actor, but what about a storyteller? I got to be me. And it occurred to me at that moment what he was talking about. He said, I play other people, and I do that well. But right now, I'm going to tell a story about my life, about my family. And it's a whole different way of digging deep. And we talked about that a little bit on the air. He said that acting and storytelling, at least in terms of personal narratives, are a little bit different. What's your take on that?
Well, you could say that theater is just a more complex form of storytelling, but to look at a particular piece, I guess I would differentiate by saying that storytelling, you're speaking directly to the audience. That's who you're talking to. Acting, you're talking to another character on stage, either someone who's really there or you imagine is there, and that filters your contact with the audience. But more important, I think, that the difference between acting and storytelling is really the difference between interesting and not interesting.
Well, yeah, well, if you're really good, though, I mean, if you're good, then they're both interesting, right?
Of course.
I would imagine so. And we're going to get your take as well, Candy, because I know as a librarian, that's a whole different mechanism. You know, you really have to sort of imagine the story is the message that you're getting to kids. But you're using a book, or sometimes you're using a different mechanism, right?
Right.
How do you make, we're going to talk about this in a little while, but how do you make that happen?
With storytelling and reading books to children, it's just best to get them engaged using different voices, making eye contact, and something so that they connect what they hear to their world. It's all about connections when it comes to that audience.
Yeah, connection is that one word that seems to come to mind when we talk about storytelling in any context, in any capacity. And I want our listeners to know this is what you're paying for, folks. You're not just paying to hear great storytelling. You're also listening and paying for what we call the art of human expression, which isn't just important, it's everything. There's nothing more important than human expression. Alan, your first story is, and I'm giving it a title, Alone in the Woods. Is there anything that we need to know before we hear it?
I don't think so. I think we can just go right ahead with it if you'd like.
Okay.
In the small town of Hoople, Illinois, the local dentist was named Dr. Miller. Dr. Miller was very deeply committed to the health of the community's children's teeth. This obsession, however, did little to make him popular. He once punched a Little League baseball coach for handing out candy bars to his team after they won a game. Halloween, children who came trick-or-treating to his house did not get candy. They got toothbrushes. Dr. Miller was known to all the children of town as Dr. Miller, the Mad Bad Driller. Nobody liked to go to the dentist and get a long lecture about brushing your teeth. Eventually, though, Dr. Miller died. However, his death did nothing to change his priorities. There was a little girl named Sarah who lived just outside of town, and on Halloween she wanted to go trick-or-treating. To get into town, she had to walk through the woods. Usually, if she went into town at night, her mother went with her, but this time her mother said, Sarah, you're a big girl now. You're 10 years old, and you can go by yourself, I think. Well, Sarah was sort of nervous about this, but the moon was out, and she could see where she was going, and she got through the woods safely. And she met up with a couple of her girlfriends, and they went trick-or-treating and got all kinds of candy and goodies and had a good time. And then it was time for Sarah to walk back through the woods home alone. By this time, the moon was behind a cloud, so it was much darker. Sarah walked through the woods, and she heard the sounds of the night animals. She was very nervous. And then ahead of her, hovering about 8 feet above the ground, with an eerie glow, she saw Dr. Miller. Dr. Miller said, Sarah, come to me. Well, Sarah turned and started to run. Dr. Miller came after her. Sarah, come back. Sarah looked over her shoulder, and Dr. Miller was getting closer. Sarah ran all through the woods, and Dr. Miller kept getting closer and closer, and finally Sarah tripped over the roots of a tree, and Dr. Miller was practically on top of her, and he said, Sarah, do not be afraid. I just wanted to give you your toothbrush.
I love that. I love that. If your smile is not becoming, you should be coming to me. How you like that? I just thought about that one. Yes,
I may have to add that.
You have to add that one. I love those freebie toothbrushes you get on the way out of the dentist. I love that. All right. Great. I love scary stories with that real kind of a fun topsman. You write your stories, don't you?
For the most part, yes.
I mean, this is something you carved out yourself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit later how you do that, because that is not easy stuff. Beautiful, beautiful. You know, there's always something creepy about the woods. Deep shadows, animals lurking in the brush, the absence of people and lights. Tatiana, you ever go walking in the woods alone?
So I've read Hansel and Gretel, so yes. I've read enough Brothers Grimm to know not to do that.
Yeah, Hansel and Gretel is really, in my judgment, one of the scariest stories. You know,
I think Little Red Riding Hood is worse.
Little Red Riding Hood is not. Yeah, Little Red Riding Hood and Hansel and Gretel are two of the most misunderstood stories in life. I was doing a workshop several years ago for teachers and elementary school teachers, and they asked me. They said, "Well, you know, isn't Little Red Riding Hood really about mothers telling their kids you shouldn't go out running around alone?" Well, that's not necessarily what the story's about, you know, but I can understand that. But it's Hansel and Gretel that really scares the hell out of most people. Because at the end of the story, what do? They just shove this little old witch into an oven and they slam the door. And I remember a parent asking, "Isn't that awfully violent?" And I said to her and the entire group, "Well, let's do this instead. Okay, little Sally, you go and get a good night's sleep now. We don't know where that witch is. She could be under your bed. Or maybe she's knocking at the window. We don't know where she is. Sweet dreams. We want to make sure she is dead and gone." Isn't that right? So that's Hansel and Gretel. So don't be afraid, Tatiana. Do we have some individuals who called in and made some donations?
We have two, actually.
Oh, my God. All right. Thank you.
We have Bridget Mueller and then Eric Heen.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Bridget. Thank you so much. That is so nice. These are two great friends of the show. Please give us a call at 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT. We are off to a great start. Thank you again, guys. Thank you so very, 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 very much. Well, there's nothing creepier than turning on the radio and hearing what, Tatiana? That's right. Silence. Thank you. You did that so well. But that's not going to happen because we want people to call
713-526-5738.
Thank you so much. So What's Your Story is always live, and it's the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And again, that was 713-526-5738. Or just come by 419 Lovett, and Tatiana will tell you a story. But just get online, get in line. I don't care if you're out of line or in a lineup. Just get on there and just go ahead and give us your donations, and we will thank you for life. Candy, you grew up on the east side of Houston. You've been a librarian at Cobb Elementary School in Channelview for 15 years.
Go Cougars.
Go, there you go. Those of you who don't know what Channelview is, it's in the Houston General Metropolitan Area. Okay. Yeah, you've acted in several plays at Pasadena Get Down Dina Little Theater and the University of St. Thomas. You're also a member of the Texas Library Association Children's Roundtable and Storytelling Roundtable. Tell us about the Storytelling Roundtable. What's that all about?
The Texas Librarian Storytelling Roundtable is essentially like the Houston Storytelling Guild. We meet at certain times for a conference, and they schedule great storytellers to come in to teach writing skills, telling skills, and all that we can take back to the public library and the schools.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. You know, our kids get a lot from listening to stories. Parables is one. But as a librarian, what is the most important lesson that our children get from telling stories? We know we get that a lot from listening to them, but from telling stories.
I think it's the culture that they receive. They can relate it to themselves, and also vocabulary, and just a chance, one, to be purely entertained,
right,
but
right.
also to get some knowledge or comfort, something to relate to themselves.
Right. And I appreciate that response because you're so right. It is a way of enhancing your cultural awareness. It's a way of increasing your vocabulary. It's a way of enjoying the idea of reading something. I mean, think about that, right?
Exactly.
And of course, when adults read books to their children, it's a great way for adults and children to interact. None of that really sounds terribly profound, but you know better than anyone, doesn't happen too often, and we
exactly.
really need to make that happening. Now, Candy, you have an unsettling sounding story, one that you read and claims apply to you. Now, applies to you. Is there anything that we need to know before hearing your story?
What, to me, storytelling combines both realistic happenings and unreal elements. And it allows the listener to be brought into another world, and they can believe as they choose what they hear. My story is
so
one of the stories.
So this is like fusion of Candyland.
There you go.
Okay, very good. The puns are coming tonight. I can't help it.
Can't help it,
Tatiana. It's just the cleverness is just surfacing. I can't help it.
Yeah. Right. My cousin Sarah was married, was murdered, and now I have little pinkies. You believe how you choose it.
That's amazing.
So
mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Should
we go in?
Oh, please.
My cousin Sarah was murdered when she was 24, and she would always haunt the house that she lived in. Every year we would go to Sarah's house, which is our family's land, and have a family reunion. Loved going to Sarah's house because it was an old house with a giant porch that went all the way around. We had our picnic there and gathers and talking and had a blast until the night where nobody could spend the night, not even family. Sarah always haunted the house because she was murdered in it. One day a preacher comes to de-haunt the house. He's going to figure out what happened and why nobody could be in there. So he goes to the house and he gets his Bible and he sits in the rocking chair that he found there and he starts reading his Bible and he's rocking back and forth. Back and forth. And he gets up and he goes and starts a fire in the fireplace. And he sits back down and he's rocking back and forth. Back and forth. And it wasn't long before he heard somebody stomping up the basement steps. Hello? Hello, I'm not going to hurt you. Please come out and tell me what's wrong. What happened? But nothing did happen. And so he went and sat down and he started reading his Bible and he was rocking back and forth, and after a while he hears somebody knocked on the basement door. Hello, please come out and tell me what happened. I'm just here to help you. But Sarah didn't come. The preacher walked over to the fireplace and he stoked the fire so that he could get warm again. He went and sat in his rocking chair and he began reading his Bible and he was rocking back and forth, and he fell asleep. Has it ever happened to you that you just woke up like that, in a snap, and wondered what was wrong? Well, that's what happened to the preacher. And when he woke, he heard ch-ch-ear. Somebody had opened the basement door, and in walked Sarah. Now, Sarah was murdered years ago, so she was wearing one of those old-fashioned dresses with the lace that went high up to the collar and the lace around the sleeves. Sarah proceeded to tell the preacher that she was murdered for her money and that the guy that killed her goes to his church. So Sarah broke off part of her pinky bone, and he gave it to the preacher, and she told him that to put the pinky in the collection plate, and when he passed the money around, that her bone would stick to her murderer. So the preacher goes to church the next day, and he's very anxious because he realizes in his pocket is the bone of a dead woman. So it becomes time for communion, and they're singing Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. And they pass out the bread, which represents the body of Jesus. Then they continue the song, and they pass out the fruit of the vine, which represents the blood of Jesus. And now at this point, the preacher is drenched in sweat, and he walks around with a tray to collect the monies, and he sticks the bone from his pocket and into his plate. And as he's walking by, the gentleman puts his money into the collection plate, and Sarah's bone sticks to him. Now the gentleman began to freak out, and he started to wave his hand harshly, and the bone did not come off. So after the preacher took him to the police station, he was arrested for murder. The preacher then went back to Sarah's house and informed her that now she could rest in peace because her murderer had been found. Sarah graciously gave her money to the church. And now, in my family, because Sarah gave her money to the church, all of our pinky bones are shorter than anyone else. Now I can ask the gentleman in the booth, as well as the listeners, to take your hands and hold them palm up facing you. Your pinkies should go at least halfway up to your next finger. But mine don't.
Oh my God. That is a bona fide horror story. That is... Mm-hmm. Now look, listeners, this is the first time I've heard it. John, the first time. Alan, I'm afraid to ask this question, but I have to. Yeah, that was an incredible ending. That was an amazing ending. And what part can you tell us? I mean, this is almost like a legend, because legends have that element of truth, right?
Right. And then the element of make-believe as well.
Tell us what part was true. Can you do that? Or not? Because you
actually
don't have to.
None of it was true. It was something
true
that I read in the storybook, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I do have small pinkies.
So I
have the proof that it could have happened to me.
I got
you. But that's listeners want to believe.
So that's the next question. So ultimately, this is a story that you created in order to demonstrate how this anatomical obstacle that you have can in fact be the case.
Right. It may have happened. It may not.
That is amazing. And do that again one more time. So we will hold our...
You can see it, Skyline Screamers. I'll be telling that story again.
Yeah.
And anybody that wants to see.
Yeah. I'm going to be at Gettysburg, another haunted place, but that's okay. Ooh. Yeah, I know. Really a haunted place. But so tell us again about this.
My pinkies are very short. Mm-hmm. And most pinkies fingers go up to the middle of the next finger. And mine do not even go up halfway.
That's so unbelievable.
I could very well be missing a bone in honor that somebody gave part of their body to the church.
This could be the real deal. Oh, brother. You are listening to Tales from the Proverbial Crypt on this FearFest Fun Drive combo. On So What's Your Story on Houston's KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, with guest tellers Candy Baim and Alan Gardner Atkinson. I'm Hank Rubicek with Tatiana Gago. Tatiana, what is happening in the wild, wild world of Houston storytelling?
First, Dr. Hank, I got something for our listeners to do when they want to donate. So, and if you don't want to donate online or come in the station or call the station,
just put it in my bank account. There you go. Right?
Or mine.
Well, I'm talking about my younger audience out there.
Oh, you know what? You know what? That was not really called for to make it that clear. But go for it. What?
You guys can cash app us with at.
I mentioned that I'm getting my Social Security check for the first time next month, and now she's having a field day with it. Go ahead.
You can cash app us at $KPFT Houston.
Great idea. Thank you.
Okay, so let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, that is located at 1500 Sunset. And this is the perfect time to remind our listeners that this Saturday, October 20th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., the Guild is sponsoring Skyline Screamers at Marmion Park at 18th and Heights Boulevard. Bring your blankets, chairs, flashlights, and a place to run and hide because you'll be scared out of your wits. And be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about other events like Telebration held on November 17th. And while you're checking things out at the Guild's website, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under Radio Program. And if you don't own a radio, that's no problem, because you can listen to a stream live on kpft.org and Facebook Live. Why not suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share with your friends? And we'd love it if you'd like us when you leave.
Thank you so much, Tatiana. So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. And remember our friends at the Moth and Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy some dazzling stories and get acquainted with the growing Houston storytelling community. It really is a great, great community. Next one is November 12th, and the theme is Beginnings. Why not begin your storytelling addiction by getting to the Moth? Tatiana mentioned shows since 2008. For those of you who don't know us, we started as an open journal once a month until you said, you know what, Hank, once isn't enough. We want more. So we went weekly from Monday mornings at 6 and then Thursdays at 10 p.m. to our very prime time at 8 to 9 p.m. on Wednesdays. And hundreds of tellers have graced our studio with stories that stretch the boundaries of the human heart. Tragedies, trajectories, stories of loss, tales of jubilation, students sharing their creative work. And this is interesting. This is true. Candy, a mother telling the story of her murdered daughter. She did that the first time. Wow. For the first time when she was on the air. Also, that a young man who talked about meeting his father for the first time. Nikki Cazares, the attorney for Anthony Graves, was talking about the exoneration of Anthony Graves. There were actors, playwrights, teachers, all telling stories from every category and inspired from every human stimulus, your body, you know, your gut, your heart. Stories coming from every part of your soul. And that's what you're paying for. Feelings and emotions put into words and gestures, all crystallized into meaningful human expression. So please, keep us going strong and give me a call at 713-526-5738 or go online to kpft.org and then donation, select a form of payment, and scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you choose to support. You know, every program deserves your support. So What's Your Story is sandwiched, for example, between our good friend Jacqueline Batiste, whose People of Earth taps into the richness of indigenous cultures, and then Flash Gordon Parks follows up with a fusion of interviews and music that you're not going to find anywhere else on the dial. KPFT is Houston. We are Pacifica Radio, fueled for peace. And we are again at 713-526-5738, Jam KPFT. Texas folktales are legendary. And thanks to professional storytellers like Jerry Young, no one knows ghost stories better than he, here's one of his famous stories called Granny Death, just to prove how spooky Texas legends can be. Tatiana, if you would, please.
Granny Death was older than any of the villagers could remember. She lived far out in the desert, and during the day, the old woman wandered across the land gathering herbs and plants, which she ground into powders that she mixed into elixirs and potions, with which she healed the villagers' colics and coughs and their headaches and their stomach ailments. Ah, the villagers blessed the old curandera for her potions and elixirs. In the pocket of her dress, she carried a strange white alabaster vial that the old healer called her vial of life. A blood-red elixir swirled and eddied within the vial. This mysterious potion was said to restore life to a dying soul. From time to time, villagers came to the ancient curandera, pleading for her to bring her vial of life to the bedside of a dying loved one. The family watched anxiously as the old woman entered the room. Sometimes, the old curandera leaned over the bed and let two drops of the blood-red elixir of life fall on the lips of the dying parent or dying child. Immediately, the dying soul leaped from the bed and returned to the family's happy embrace. Other times, a family gathered around the deathbed and watched as the old woman stood motionless at the foot of the bed of the dying one. On those occasions, the family wailed with despair as they watched their loved ones fade into death's chilling embrace. Only the curandera knew the ingredients of the elixir of life. The villagers called her Granny Death. Some of the villagers said she was a witch, but no one dared show disrespect to the old woman and her elixir of life. Now one day, the villagers jostled and chattered as they went on their way to the cemetery. It was the Day of the Dead. Some people carried bunches of yellow marigolds and chrysanthemums. The children ate sugary candy in the form of skulls. Once in the cemetery, families spread their picnics on the grave of their ancestors, and while the grown-ups talked and chattered, the children played hide-and-seek among the gravestones. This day, Granny Death shuffled along the road like the shadow of death itself. The happy crowds greeted their beloved curandera with merriment and laughter. The old woman did not return their greetings. Suddenly, there was a mule driver. He pulled at the old woman's shawl. "Granny Death," he said, "I am a poor mule driver, and I have no work since there is no more silver in the mines. My wife and I have 10 children around our table. Our children's bellies are bloated because there is no food for them. Now my wife is with child once again. She's convinced that the child is a boy." "Go away, mule driver," said the curandera. "What do I have to do with your unborn child?" "Please, curandera, please hear my plea," mule driver said. "Take the boy. Raise him as your own child. Teach him to be a gentleman. Teach him the power of plants and herbs." "Ah, you're crazy, mule driver. I am an old woman. I cannot raise a young child," she said. The mule driver pleaded, "Oh, curandera, I am at my wit's end. My wife and I are so poor that we cannot put food into our children's mouths. If you do not take the boy, I shall have to desert the child in the mountains." "Very well, mule driver. Bring the boy to me. I will raise him as my own son. I will teach him to be a gentleman, and I will teach him the power of plants and herbs as you ask." Without another word, Granny Death shuffled into the cemetery. The day the child was born, the mule driver delivered the baby to the curandera. She raised the boy as her own son. As she promised, she taught the boy to be a gentleman, and she taught him the powers of herbs and plants. The boy learned quickly. When he was 10 years old, he went alone into the hills to collect the plants and herbs that Granny Death needed to mix her potions and elixirs. By the time the first fuzz appeared on his chin, the boy mixed potions and elixirs under the old lady's approving eye. Finally, the old woman taught the youth the secrets of the elixir of life. She explained to the young man that the blood-red elixir was used for only the most seriously ill, for which there was no hope. Then one day, the ancient curandera kissed the young man and pressed a vial of life into his hand. Then she sent him on his way with the final word, "Remember, my son, you must never disrespect the elixir of life, and you must never disrespect your granny Death when she stands at the foot of a dying soul. The young man settled in the village. Within short years, he became a well-known and wealthy apothecary who treated and sold herbs to the villagers for their ailments. One day, on the Day of the Dead, the young man joined the happy crowd on the villagers walking to the cemetery. He carried a bundle of yellow marigolds. He carried a basket of food, and he looked forward with happiness to enjoy his lunch on the graves of his mother and father. Near the gate of the cemetery, the young man saw a beautiful young woman. She was so beautiful that, why, he thought she must be the Blessed Virgin herself. The young lady's eyes shone like jade. Her hair was the color of raven's wings, and her lips like red rose petals. The two young people fell deeply in love at the first look. The villagers were deliriously happy for the couple. Her parents welcomed the rich and famous apothecary into the family as her own son. A few days before the marriage was announced, the girl's father became desperately ill. The doctors whispered that it was time to call the priest. The young girl pleaded with her young man to make her father well. When he entered the room, the young man saw Granny Death standing straight and rigid at the foot of the bed. Her dark shawl covered her face in such a way it seemed that her face was only a dark black space. The young apothecary remembered the curandera's words, "You must never disrespect your granny Death or her elixir life when she stands at the foot of the bed of a dying soul." The young man's beloved wailed in despair, throwing her arms around his neck. Her cries and pleadings rang in his ears. Without a word, the young man quickly moved beside the bed. He pulled up from his pocket the vial of life that Granny Death had given him years before. The blood-red elixir swirled and eddied in the vial. He quickly leaned over the dying father and let two drops of the elixir of life fall on the dying man's lip. The dying man promptly sat up to the world of the living. The young man's beloved threw her arms around his neck, covering his lips and faces with kisses of joy. Granny Death's cruel stare glared at the young man. The young man's heart felt like he had been hit in the chest by a hard fist. "You have disrespected your Granny Death in the elixir of life," she said. And the ancient curandera turned her back on the young man and strode from the room. The wedding day was set for the young man and his beloved. The women spent days cooking pastries and food, and the men roasted the finest beef over a fire pit. On the wedding day, the bride walked down the church aisle, her cheeks flushed with the heat of the candles and the excitement of the moment. The young man thought her more beautiful than the first day they met. Standing at the altar, the young man reached his hand to take the hand of his love. As her fingers touched his, the bride clutched her heart and collapsed to the floor. Her breathing was shallow and she perspired all over. Her hands felt cold and clammy. Death sat heavy upon her heart. The young man knelt beside his beloved. He clutched her head to his chest. Terrified, the bride clutched at her heart. The young man kissed her pale lips as he pulled a vial of the elixir of life from his pocket. Trembling, he pulled the cork stopper from the bottle. As he lifted the vial to her lips, a dark shadow fell across the white bodice of the girl. They looked to see Granny Death standing at the feet of the bride. Terror seized the young woman and the young man. Without a word, Granny Death waved the back of her hand towards the bottle. Perhaps it was the old woman's movement startled him. Perhaps it was magic. But the vial of life flew from the young man's hand and smashed against the crucifix above the altar. The red elixir ran down the Christos image like blood. The man cried out in despair as he watched his beloved's life fade through the church doors with the old woman Death.
Okay. Now, that is, I love that story for a lot of reasons. It does what good storytelling does. But do any of you guys believe in ghosts? Tatiana, you believe in ghosts?
No. I can't say that
what,
I do.
You want to think about it for a minute? Or okay, that's a pretty exact answer. Okay, what about you? You believe in ghosts?
If I see one,
a ridiculous question.
If I see it,
Halloween.
I believe. There you go.
Well, I have never seen anything that I recognize to be a ghost. But a couple of people who I consider to be credible claim they have. Yeah. So,
really,
I don't. Yeah. I guess I wouldn't say I believe in them, but I'm not totally closed to the possibility.
Did they describe to you what they saw when they claimed to have seen a ghost?
Yeah.
What did they describe? What did they say?
Well, I had a roommate when I lived in Corpus Christi for a while who said that in our apartment there was a ghost. It looked like a man who was about... maybe 50 years old, and he would appear from time to time. I never saw him, but both he and his daughter claimed that they did, so it could be. And then the storyteller, Tim Tingle, I'm sure you know who he is.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
definitely.
He talked one time about the fact that his stepfather was murdered at 3 in the morning. And at exactly 3 in the morning, his television came on and has been coming on by itself at 3 in the morning ever since.
Television? What is significant about that?
Well, occurred at the exact same moment his stepfather was murdered and continued.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to tell you, I'm really kind of excited about possibly seeing something in Gettysburg. I'm a Civil War buff, and I'm fascinated by that part of the world that can possibly communicate with us. I don't know if I've ever communicated with the spirit. I don't know, but there are times I think that I have. Sometimes my students are strange enough, Tatiana, where they think that. I think they might be the spirits, but only kidding. Just giving you our time. You guys ever go to the Spaghetti Warehouse when it was open?
I think I was there once.
That was supposed to be the most haunted place in Houston.
It has an eerie feeling.
It did have a very eerie feeling, no kidding. My wife went on a ghost tour downtown a couple of years ago, and it was really very interesting because, you know, the story is that in the Spaghetti Warehouse, there was a guy who got into the elevator. He worked there, and as the story goes, and there was no floor. He went right down the shaft. And his wife went following him, and she fell down, and it was really strange. And I swear this is the truth. I don't know if it was an air conditioning problem, but, you know, my wife goes to the ladies' room, and I go to the men's room, and the men's room was it was like freaking freezing. It was, swear to God, like it felt like it was 30 below zero, and I could have sworn that I saw this smoky substance coming out of the corner, and then suddenly I heard... And that's the truth. Okay, Candy, do you have a favorite scary movie?
I do, actually. When we were younger, we would watch movies like Halloween and Freddy Krueger, Friday the 13th. And my mother made my sister and cousin and I watch Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window.
Rear Window.
To prove that there could be horrifying and intense thrillers with no blood and guts.
Well, you know... Alfred Hitchcock was just a master. My favorite show of all time was Twilight Zone, which I don't know if I put in the category of a horror movie by any means. It was far beyond its time, before its time. But people like Alfred Hitchcock and Rod Serling would put together these masterful journeys into the macabre that no one could ever match. They were magnificent. What about you? Favorite scary movie?
Favorite scary movie? Maybe North by Northwest.
North by Northwest, another Hitchcock classic. Tatiana?
The Shining.
Oh,
good choice.
Here's Johnny. That's a good one. Yeah, for me, it's Psycho. You know, Psycho is always going to be it. Mother! Mother! You know, it's just, yeah, none of you have seen these movies, or are my imitations that bad? Apparently, it's the latter. Okay, that's not a problem, because we can move right along. You know, these stories tonight are, I have to tell you, they're better than I thought they would be. Candy, I'm still thinking about your story. I really am. I am still thinking about that Pinky story. That was eerie and frightening, and that's the kind of story I'm going to be thinking about all night while I stay up. Alan, you have another story for us, and it's called The Wall of Blood. Tell us your story.
The small town I grew up in was a very quiet place. Nothing much ever happened there. It was not on a main highway, so if a line of more than three cars came through town, we thought it was a parade. As I say, nothing much happened there until one June night when the moon was full. The stone wall, which was all that remained of an old building that had been torn down, began to bleed. From a small crack between the stones, blood appeared on the wall and began to run down till it covered more and more of the wall. Several people put their hand in it just to make sure that's what it really was. And most of the people in town gathered around to look at this strange occurrence. And then at midnight, the bell in the church tower, all by itself, began to ring. One, two, three, it rang 13 times. And on the 13th ring, the ground began to shake like a small earthquake. And the preacher stood up and yelled, "Hallelujah! The judgment day is here. Revelations is happening. We're all going to heaven." And many of the religious people in town, and some of the others too, all knelt down and prayed that they'd be the ones taken up to heaven. But after a few minutes, the shaking stopped. The wall stopped bleeding. The blood all ran down into the ground, and everyone went home. The next morning, old Mr. Larson, who owned the local jewelry store, was found dead, pale white and dead. And when the medical examiner autopsied him, there was not a drop of blood in his body, though there was no indication of any wound. The next month, July, at the time of the full moon, the wall began to bleed again. This time the local doctor was called, and to try and stop the bleeding, he put a Band-Aid on the wall. It didn't help. It soon washed away, and the wall was covered with blood. And then at midnight, the local fire siren began to sound. All the firemen looked at each other because none of them were at the fire station to set it off. And then the earth began to shake again. And after a few minutes it stopped, and everyone went home. And the next morning, the local midwife, Mrs. Smith, was found pale white dead. And when the medical examiner cut her open, there was not a drop of blood in her, and yet no visible wound. Well, August came, time for the full moon, and a lot of people left town. They didn't want to be there. But if some of us stayed, and that night the wall began to bleed again. And then at midnight, flashes of lightning struck all over. Several buildings were set on fire. Three houses and a store burned. Then the earth shook, and it stopped after several minutes. And the next morning, Mr. Johnson, the local grocer, was found dead, pale white. And when the medical examiner cut him open, there was not a drop of blood in him. Well, the mayor declared that the town was uninhabitable, and we all had to move. A chain-link fence was put up all around the town, and signs were posted warning people not to enter. It was several years before I went back, but I was curious what had happened to the town. All the lawns needed mowing. The grass was tall. Most of the buildings were still there, though they were getting into decay. As I walked through the town, I saw three dead bodies, all pale white. I don't know who they were. Perhaps homeless men who'd wandered in looking for a place to stay, or people who didn't believe the story and decided to be adventurous. But I do know that the story is true. So if you ever go there, be sure it's not on the night of the full moon.
Okay. You do write most of your own stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you go about doing this? How do you start?
Well, I think it's possible to make up a story about absolutely anything that you can ask a question about.
Okay. I like that. I like that. Give us an example.
Uh-huh.
Like, for example, ask Candy and me a question, and let's see what give us an example of what you mean.
Okay.
I like that.
Why would anyone want to build a treehouse in a rainforest?
To live with the animals.
To get even wetter.
Okay. And once you have the answer to your question, and sometimes your first answer isn't the one you want, so that's... So I try to think usually.
So give us like the first 30 seconds of a story that you're creating in your mind right now.
Oh, okay. Well, ask a question. Why did the mouse run up the clock? One day, Seymour the mouse looked out of his hole in the living room wall. And there was a brand new grandfather clock, something he'd never seen before. And it was a long, long way across the living room floor, and there were many dangers to encounter. First of all, there was Spartacus the cat, who could pounce at any moment. Then there were the people of the house, didn't always watch where they were walking, and he'd always been stepped on several times. And lastly, Seymour had heard about a brand new kind of rat and mouse poison that looked and smelled just like cheese, and you couldn't tell the difference until
it
was too late.
Okay, love it. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but you know, and this reminds me of an exercise that I do in a workshop, and you went there, where I would make a statement and then point to somebody, and you would continue, right? So, you know, Seymour had a family, and who were they, Candy?
His wife, Sally.
Right.
And their children, Sue, Sam.
Right. Very
and
good. Right.
Sarah.
And he had a brother-in-law who didn't like it. He used to look at him and say, "You dirty rat." Okay, so you're right. So we just kind of add, and we just mm-hmm. add a line, and we have a story.
Yeah, it gives you a starting point.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Great starting point. Tatiana, any comments about that? You took that storytelling class.
I like the improvising.
Yeah.
I don't think I could be that creative, though.
Sure you can. Of course you can. No, but the idea is that in this case, we're working together as a group in creating a story. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, creates a kind of bond that narratives innately do. They just really do. Mm-hmm. Magnificent. I don't know if anybody's calling in. Are they, Tatiana? I don't hear the phone ringing in. I want people to call us. They need to. Here's the thing. You know, nobody tunes in and says, "Well, what a terrible show, but what do you want from a bunch of programmers who aren't paid off?" You expect excellence, and you get it each and every week. This is literally, folks, a labor of love. Tatiana is magnificent. She's here each and every week. We don't get any money. We don't do anything other than just love coming here, doing a great program. You know, many times people will come to us and they'll say, wow, you guys got a great job. How much are you paid? Without realizing that this is Pacifica. This is listener sponsored. It's corporate free. We aren't paid. We care about the eclectic inventory that dishes out to this city each and every day. It's important to know that Pacifica comes from the peace movement in 1948, when people believed that you couldn't have a radio station unless you had corporate sponsoring. But that's not true. You can have filter-free, free expression that makes sense to a diverse community. And that's exactly what we do. And we sure would love it if you could give a call in. We're almost out of time, but you know what? It just takes 90.1 seconds to give us a call at 713-526-5738. Let's have some fun Halloween questions. Your favorite costume, Candy?
I don't necessarily have a favorite costume, but I'm known as the crazy book lady and the crazy Nini, as my nieces call me. And you never know what I'll use as a prop. I used a juice infuser as a character to represent eyes for Fly Guy.
Wow.
So
all I have right.
crazy mix-ups, anything to get kids to read.
Love it. Love it. Alan, you have a favorite costume when you were a
probably
kid?
Probably a pirate. Pirates are fun.
Ah, I used to love pirate movies. You know, they're all rated R. You've heard that one. You've heard that one. You've heard that
oh,
one.
Yes.
Tatiana, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You have a great, you have a favorite costume?
Yes, when I was Doris.
You were me. Right.
That's horrifying.
Right. All right. Excellent.
That's scary.
Candy, shout outs.
Shout outs. Friends and family. And I have to say hi to my nieces, Chloe Nickel, Kaylin Nickel, and Laurel Sterling and Caroline Raymond.
Beautiful. Alan, shout outs there.
Oh, hello, Mom. I know you can't hear me, but I'm thinking of you.
All right. Listen, Warren's going to be with us next week with artists in the LGBTQ community who use theater to tell stories about coming out to friends and families. And it's a really a great method of support and disclosure. No one does this better than Dr. Holloman. Also, it is Warren's birthday on Saturday. Happy birthday, Dr. Warren. He will be 39 years old, I guess, again. We love Warren. He is family. And Warren, have a fabulous, fabulous birthday from everyone at So What's Your Story. Narratives powered by tales of discrimination and marginalization is what Warren will be addressing next week. You know, thank you, Candy Bame and Alan Gardner Atkinson, for your Halloween spirit and masterful storytelling and for helping us during this fall fun drive. And again, folks, it just takes 90.1 seconds to give us a call with your donations, because your generosity and live storytelling in Houston are inextricably connected. It's all about the story, the windows in which we allow others to enter, the reassurance that we all have something to say. It's powerful stuff, and we are proud to be the mechanism that brings it to you. Now, Tatiana's got some kind of great Halloween show song for us. What do you got there? The Monster Mash. I knew you were going to play that. That's from last century, and you even know that song. Don't you dare move, because the very cool new Flash Gordon Parks is up next. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just turning in for the night or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story and Treasure What You Hear. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
They played the MASH.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the MASH.
They played the Monster MASH.
Oh.
Out from his coffin, Rex's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the MASH.
It's now the Monster MASH.
The MASH.